Two items for me, and then I'm going to have staff cover in more detail a couple of other items. We just got back last week from the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies meeting in Cody, Wyoming. It was a very good meeting, and it's a meeting that I'd like to talk to the commission about and maybe encourage more participation in the future. Most states provide a couple of slots for commissioners at least to come to the meeting, and I think some of you maybe have been in the past. It's a interesting way to talk to your peers from other states and learn quite a bit about what's going on in the West. Chair Smith has been to a winter meeting. The summer meeting's usually quite a bit bigger, and there's quite a bit going on, so that's something we ought to talk about in the future. But one thing I wanted to report on from that meeting is I chair the state federal tribal section, and I worked with Bob Everett, our manager from up north, and we put on a panel discussion, and we invited Sean Yannity from Washington, and we had a couple of other tribal members from the other parts of the West. It turned out really well. We had great attendance, and it was a good meeting talking about the future of co-management. I can tell you Washington has certainly moved down that road further than any other state. We had a lot of interest from Oregon, and in particular California. California has 104, I think, I was told, different tribes, and they're looking to what's Washington as kind of some examples of how we work with our tribes in managing fish and wildlife. So it was a good meeting. A lot of federal attendance. We did have Rick Kahn from the National Park Service talking a bit about their work with tribal governments in Alaska and down here. So it was great. Anyway, it was really a good session. The next item I want to just mention, we've made quite a bit of progress on our steelhead plate. And I don't know if, Kelly, did you grab a couple of examples of the steelhead plate?
I don't
have a. Yeah, would you go grab a couple? And I texted him a minute ago, and he must not have got it. But anyway, we've been working, plugging away, looking at some different art, and I wanted to just show you a couple of the leaders of that art this morning and see how it goes. We're in the process right now of we have to check with state police on the readability of numbers on the plates, and it's been kind of fun to look at different art and suggestions. My prediction is these plates will probably be the most popular wildlife plate in the state. Just we have lots of fishermen out there, and they're turning out really pretty nice. So that's been kind of a fun item. I think it'll be next spring, possibly.
I can't remember. January 1st.
So if we already signed up for one, we're on the list.
Right, and I get the opportunity to designate the first 25, and I think you've all been asked. And since then, I have two. If you declined, but now you've had second thoughts, I have two new slots that have come open. So anyway, let me know. A little bit about Wild Futures. We've continued our efforts with that package. We're on our second round of public meetings. Of course, we had our first round of listening sessions last fall. We've been doing quite a bit of small group meetings, and now we're doing a round of regional meetings. Just finished the first two. Had light attendance in Spokane, a bit more in Sela two nights ago. Getting some good feedback. We put out a package that sportsmen and women and wildlife watchers are taking a look at now not only the package on our fees, but also what we proposed as items to move forward and do to enhance our abilities for resource management into the future. So it's been a really interesting process, and it's really gotten us in front of a lot of public, and we're enjoying it. So we'll provide a report on that soon, on the feedback we've got. You're going to see a couple of items today where we talk more about it, and Jennifer's going to give you some more detail. And I think many of you have talked to some staff one-on-one. So that will be one of our main items over the next few months. A couple of other things that are going, I guess, hot and heavy right now that I wanted to provide an update, and I'm going to ask staff to help me out with this, is Eric or Donnie, one of you want to come up and give a wolf update, and or both of you?
I'll start on wolves. Chairman Smith, members of the commission, Director Unsworth, my name is Donnie Martorell. I'm the wolf policy lead for Department of Fish and Wildlife. Wanted to bring you up to speed that 2 days ago on August 3rd, Director Unsworth authorized the lethal removal of a portion of the Profanity Peak Pack in northeastern Washington. As you probably recall, here recently we revised the protocol for lethal removal of wolves with the Wolf Advisory Group. That was a protocol that was completed the end of May that was unanimously supported by the Wolf Advisory Group and department staff that were involved in that. And so Director Unsworth and his authorization for that removal, it's the first time we've exercised a portion of that protocol. That came on the heels of what's outlined in the protocol that on midday on August 3rd, they'd reached four confirmed depredation events in the Profanity Peak Pack. We also had three probable events. All of those have been wolves have killed livestock. Just after the director authorized that lethal removal, we had a fifth confirmed depredation event in the Profanity Peak Pack. So there are a total of five confirmed and three probable at this point. The other conditions that are outlined in that protocol is that the producers in this area, and there are a number of producers that overlap with the Profanity Peak Pack, but the loss has been experienced by two producers. Both of those have met the expectations in the protocol. We call it sanitation plus one, meaning that the producers are removing the carcasses that are killed by wolves from the landscapes, so they're not attractants. And they're practicing at least one of the deterrence measures to be proactive, to try to deal with this situation proactively the best we can. And each of those producers had a deterrence measure on the ground. Once we got the first depredation, they started working with our conflict staff for any kind of ramp up, added more human presence in that area. And the hope is, let me back up a little bit and state that most of the time, wolves and livestock coexist without an escalation of depredations like this. And you've heard me say before, about 80% of the time, those two critters can exist on the landscape without escalation of depredations. The flip of that is 20% of the time we do see an escalation of conflict. We try to be as proactive as we can with a non-lethal deterrence. But when those fail, as they have in this case, and it's also in our protocol, and we meet those other criteria, we look to lethal removal to stop depredations in the near future. Again, the hope is that neither livestock or wolves die, but unfortunately that's the scenario in a few of the cases, and so we look to this tool to remedy that. So we are, at this point, carrying out that lethal removal authorization for partial pack removal. We're following the protocol to the T, exactly as stakeholders, department staff have developed, and at the end of this removal action, we'll be providing a full report to you and to the public. Any questions on I can help with on Profanity Peak?
Yes. I guess not so much a question, but a comment. It's actually, this meeting is my third anniversary on the commission, and the one thing that I have seen some very profound change in a positive light is the wolf issue. It was one of those things that you come here going, what are we going to do? And then the more you got down in the weeds, the more it scared you. And I have, to me, in the last year, just see a wholesale change. There's some certainty from both sides. At least we know what rules we're playing with. And as a producer, and it's easy for me to go home and sell this to my fellow producers. You know, here's the lines that we have to follow. and you guys have done a good job of holding up your end of the deal. We still have a few issues to deal with, but from where we were 3 years ago to today is absolutely night and day, and I just want to commend everybody that's been doing this. So thank you.
We didn't get a chance to talk much this morning about compensation and where we are. We did get a letter from Jack Fields and Cattlemen's Association expressing some concerns on that front. So can you give us a little update on where we are? And in relation to the Dashiell claim, too, did we ever pay that?
Happy to provide some information there. So, yes, we've been paying and offering and paying compensation for a few years now. And so getting more experience in that, and some of the feedback we've gotten to date is, and some things we might want to address, is things about the timeliness of the payments. Can we speed up that process? And, for example, there's a part of that process that producers go to the Farm Service Agency to look for compensation there, and that perhaps adds a time scale. Another improvement we're looking to do is the value of the livestock. We currently use an independent assessor, and is there opportunities to actually use the sales receipts from producers? So we're working. We brought this item to the Wolf Advisor Group. We're working with a couple Wolf Advisor Group members on some of those tweaks that you might do after you're a few years into a program that makes sense. And I think that's probably the letter you're referring to. So you'll be looking. We'll be bringing that to you soon, I hope. And then related to the producer that you spoke of from 2014 in the Huckleberry Pack area that had reported a significant loss in addition to the confirms, the sheep that were discovered. At the end of the year, there were a number of sheep that never came off the hillside, and we have processed that claim and through our livestock board that we put together and offered a payment for that, and we're waiting to hear back if they accept that payment.
Great. Thank you.
Any other?
Yeah, thanks for the report, Donnie, and appreciate Commissioner Holtzmiller's comments. I'll just add that early this morning, I kind of looking at my phone, and I was talking with the director yesterday, and he told me he was called not so flattering names, but I wanted to just for myself see some of the reaction in the press, and I came upon a press release by Defenders of Wildlife, and although they said it was regrettable, there was no criticism about the process or the decision, and I thought that was a good reflection about the department's efforts reaching out and trying to through the WAG and getting, because this was of course one of the big stumbling blocks in the wolf recovery plan was the protocol for lethal removal. So I think that's encouraging.
Thank you.
Us in the loop.
Absolutely, and I will continue to do that.
Yeah, it did help when I had to talk to some of the public about it. So I appreciate that.
You bet.
Eric?
Director, Commissioner Chair, Chairman, and the rest of the commission. I'm Eric Gardner. I'm the Assistant Director for the Wildlife Program, and it doesn't really seem fair that we had to put Donnie up here to talk about the most controversial issue of wolves, but he certainly deserves to be at the head of that in that conversation. He's been a wonderful attribute to the agency and has really run this process so well and speaks so well to the work that's been done, and really appreciate having him on the staff and being able to come up here and speak to all of you about wolves. I get a kind of transition to a couple of other items, if that's all right, and one of them is a very different topic. It's kind of a good news item, although it's connected to a conservation issue that certainly has not been resolved and still has concerns. But I just wanted to take a moment to kind of celebrate the fact that we do have a proclamation from the governor that proclaims next week as a special week for Western Pond Turtle recovery. It's the 25th anniversary of a program that's been in place that's been critical to the conservation of western pond turtle in the state. Pond turtles are liked by many, and very few people dislike them. So it's a easy species. They've been around in one form or another for 220 million years. That predates dinosaurs, and so they're an incredibly important species. They've been here for a long time, but they're at a massive extinction crisis, with nearly 50% of known turtle species already listed as threatened. So they're definitely in a dire place. In Washington in the 1990s, we only had about 150 western pond turtles. And the main purpose of this proclamation is not really to celebrate recovery, because we have a long ways to go with this species, and it does face a disease issue called shell rot, but to celebrate the partnership that we have had with Woodland Park Zoo, Oregon Zoo, and our other state, federal, and private organizations in working to recover the species. And as a result, we now have approximately 1,000 species, or 1,000 members in the wild, and about 5 populations that are currently breeding. And so it's just a moment to kind of celebrate something that good that's going on, another example of partnership, and this one working towards recover something a little bit different than a wolf, but a pond turtle. I have one other item that I'd like to speak about, and this is in direct response to some previous letters and public testimony before the commission regarding dog training on the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area. And during that public presentation and interaction with the commission, there was a commitment to come back and provide an update. So I'm just going to knock that out here in the director's report, if I could. So in short, just some of the highlights on the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area. Our staff has kicked off the development of a new wildlife area planning process that began last fall. And one Wildlife Area Advisory Committee meeting and one public scoping meeting have already been held. The scoping meeting drew significant participation from the dog training community, and they expressed their interest for return to previous management activities, including expanding the area for dog training on the site. Current management practices there do allow and support dog training, but not at the same level and not seen as at an adequate level by those members of that interest. So to address this concern, staff met with a subgroup of the dog trainer leaders on June 30th, so after the last commission meeting interaction had occurred. And we received the interests and concerns from dog trainers. We described our wildlife management obligations on those sites. And we discussed how dog training and other recreational interests will be considered as we go through the wildlife area planning process. So the subgroup participants met, and we asked them to kind of ask themselves if they had good representation of the dog training crowd. And they came back and said they think they have a pretty thorough mix, and that most of the issues are well represented on the committee, the subcommittee. So the next subgroup meeting is expected to focus on ensuring that everyone has the same involvement and opportunity to contribute to that wildlife area planning process. And since that meeting, however, we've had requests from three individuals who are interested in joining the advisory committee, and they've expressed some concern that maybe not all of their interests are adequately represented. So very late breaking news, as of August 3rd, there was another meeting with the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area Advisory Committee. And again, those committee members agreed that the current makeup of the committee is a good mix, and the majority of the interests of people who use are impacted by the wildlife area management decisions are represented. Let's see. And we will be continuing to work with the subgroup on August 18th. We'll be working with the leaders to ensure that all of the different dog training types are represented, and that there's at least awareness of from committee members of what the needs and desires for that area are. So it's a work in progress. I think we can do a more formal update to you once we get further along in the wildlife area planning process. But since this was issue specific, we just had committed to a briefing on that.
Yes.
Eric, dog training types, can you fill me in on what that means?
Sure, I can, although I do have staff with me, and so I might ask them to speak to the different areas that have been identified, but we have Clay Sprague and Melinda Posner somewhere in the room. But certainly there's dog training from just the individual training, say, with planted pheasants or Eurasian collar doves to work on a sporting dog, just particularly for hunting purposes, kind of individual basis, ranging from that to full field trial, the full-blown deal where they do a lot of bigger groups that come in and do substantial dog training events.
The field trial training and the hunt test dog training are pretty much identical, so there's no misunderstanding. The field trial training is a little bit more sophisticated and a little bit more advanced, and it's just to reiterate, it's a family event, and I know there's a lot of concerned people out there. I've had a multitude of calls, which I expressed last go around.
Osner, I work in the Lands Division. You, I think, summarized the types of dog training that goes on in the area and the interests that are there. In addition, there are folks who dog training includes dog conditioning. So folks who are training hunting bird dogs, and they're bringing their dogs out for conditioning as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commission.
Yes.
Mr. Director, that's it. Thank you.
Chair, and this one sparked a little interest in me, not about the dog training, but I guess, there again, what's the mission with this ground? Yeah, it's quote-unquote habitat, but we still need to remember to make this ground somewhat user-friendly. And there again, the department owns about 15% of my county, or our county, whatever you want to call it. And for instance, on the 4-0 acquisition, all the Mountain View area, it's a one-lane road up there. It's a gorgeous place to take horses and ride back into Wenatchee Creek and areas like that. But there's no place to turn a horse trailer around or park one unless you're a very skilled operator. And all it would take is a little bit of effort to make some parking lots, some areas, and stuff like that. And there again, being from these areas, and people go, yeah, but you can't get there. You can't use the ground. So I think in the back of our minds, we need to remember to try and keep some of this ground as user-friendly as we possibly can.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thank you.
For the remainder of this time, Ron, will you come up? I've asked Ron to come up and provide a report. Earlier in the spring, and I think it was actually after one of our last commission meetings, it became real apparent to me that we have some items that just never seem to go away. And so I challenged Ron to develop some work plans and to assign some staff to a few particular items, and he's going to go over those today and hopefully... Hopefully we're going to put some of these rocks in a box here before too much longer.
Thank you, Director Unsworth. Chair Smith, Commissioners, Deputy Director Store, how are you?
Ron Warren with the Fish Program. As the Director mentioned, we're developing many work plans to not only identify the projects, but to track them as well. This isn't a new step for the Fish Program. The Fish Program has utilized this format to track performance agreement measures between the director and the commission, so that we know exactly what we have to do to meet those objectives and make sure that we follow through with those to assure that the director's performance meetings with all of you go well. To give you an idea of some of the things that the director is talking about, you have a packet of just a few of the projects that we filled out, such as the Wainuchi project that's named in the Grays Harbor Basin Salmon Management Plan policy from the commission talks about that. That has been on the books for over 20 years, and we just never seem to finalize it. I like the put the rocks in the box. I'm going to use that. I'll make sure and give you credit for that later. But today what I'd like to do is talk mainly about my rookie year and as the assistant director of the fish program, what we're trying to accomplish in the fish program, and then very specifically about the permitting process for the 2017 North Falcon and Puget Sound fisheries. So I have been assistant director for 9 months, having a blast. I have a great team that I get to work with every day, and that has been a pleasure for the almost 37 years I've worked for the department. The three things that we're trying to do is offer some inclusion. We have to look at staff development and offer people opportunities to sit in meetings so that they have a broadened view of the world within the agency and external to the agency to help them choose career paths, and that we build their network well as they rise through the agency. So including them, and you'll see the team members in this are just a small piece. The transparency that's required to have those folks in meetings that they haven't typically sat in is also important. And then also that wraps all that up is just the enhancing the communication that occurs within the program and the regional meetings that we have from the director's awards, and getting challenging people to enhance communication and change the conversations that they have on a regular basis from, hey, what'd you do this weekend? And, you know, I challenge them to say, we love fishing, we love hunting, we love wildlife viewing, we like going hiking, but how often do we walk through the door and say, thank you very much for doing what you did over the weekend, the place looks great, or, hey, great job last week. We have to change the dialogue that we have, and to do that, you have to include more people and do the thing. So get off that soapbox, put that rock in a box. So to take a look at the format, we tie everything that we do to the strategic plan and objectives that we have as an agency. And I just want to walk through what we're going to do for the permitting of the 2017 fisheries. I'd also like to talk just briefly about some of the improvements that we hope to make for the North Falcon process next year. You can see that on the back of the 2017 sheet, which is that should be the first sheet in your packet, on the back, key actions and deliverables. Our first meeting was with a small group with co-managers on July 20th, and we talked about those improvements and what we need to do. We also talked about this permitting issue, and what we hope to do is have a state-tribal agreement and submittal for a ESA 4D Limit 6 joint submission of a permit to NOAA by October. That doesn't sound far away, and it may sound simplistic. It is a great deal of work. Currently, over the course of the last few years, we go under a Limit 7, which is just a rollover of previous permits. We update a couple of issues, but we don't talk about any of the management objective changes or modifications to any of the major fisheries or objectives within what we're going to do to notify NOAA so that they can reanalyze. We leave everything the same and just roll everything over for the most part. And what we're saying is that We have a new FRAM model that's coming up. We're going to have some modifications on how FRAM predicts what's going to happen in certain fisheries. That could change management objectives in many of our areas within Puget Sound and or freshwater areas and tributaries to Puget Sound. But overall, management objectives for particular stocks to assure that we are not precluding recovery of that stock within the ESU. We have two meetings coming up in August. One is a state and tribal meeting, mainly with attorneys, but we'll have a policy representative there along with representatives from our Attorney General's office to start talking about not only the permitting process, but any dispute resolution that may come up throughout the North Falcon process. And all of us knowing exactly how that would happen, I think, is very important so that when we get to a stage of loggerheads, that we know how to get out of it, and that we don't delay. That knowing what to do allows you to continue to take action and doesn't paralyze you. So I'm very interested in knowing what those steps look like and can freely talk about them at the table. And then we need to and then on August 25th we meet as all of the tribes and state, so our annual meeting that would have normally been held in May, we'll meet there and get some concurrence on improvements, the permit path that we're looking at from the full body, and then move forward. And so a lot of staff time will be have to occur, meetings with NOAA between then and October when we submit the plan, and hopefully will lead to a smoother transition through the North Falcon process next year, resulting in a list of agreed to fisheries by April 12th, the last day of the salmon section of the Pacific Fishery Management Council process. Some of the other permit or the improvements that we hope to make is that last year it was difficult for all of us, and there were a lot of new faces that were at the table that were in new roles. And although I have been around and in front of many tribes, my role within the agency changed. And there were some trust issues. They didn't know, as I didn't know them in that role, there were some, so we had have to continue to work through that. That is nothing but time and consistency, making sure that you're transparent and that you're explaining not only to them but to staff so that there's continued consistency and dialogue that's occurring. The other thing is that the tribes with the new change seem to insist that only one person be at every table to talk to, and that was they wanted myself at the table, and for those commissioners who were at the final PFMC week and that have participated in that process before, you know that when you've got that many tribes and an individual is trying to go from each of the four coastal tribes to each of the tribal or regional meetings in Puget Sound, one person can't be at every single meeting for every single issue. And so the conversation that we've had thus far is there has to be development, as there has been in the past, allowance for other policy people within the agency, and we've got a great team of policy folks in the FISH program that participate in North of Falcon, able to go into those tribal meetings or regional meetings, boil it down to one issue or two issues, whatever it might be, and then if they believe that they need to elevate that, bring that to get myself or the director there at that meeting to try to resolve those issues. And that as a change has been talked about with high-level folks within the tribes, and they're all very aware of the need to have to do that. The other thing that we have talked about as an improvement is that, and maybe this gets back to the first issue is of trust, is that we didn't do a very good job as state tribal folks directing and communicating policy needs to technical staff. Before I go too far into that, I'll talk about the USV Oregon process. USV Oregon has a great deal of structure to it. It has production advisory groups, technical advisory groups, and all of the parties within those forums meet and talk prior to the policy folks getting together, and they report out and write reports for those policy people at those meetings. I'm not suggesting that we need to offer or direct staff to write reports after every meeting. They'd skin me alive. But what we talked about as co-managers is a clarity in and possibly written direction to technical staff so they know exactly what we're expecting them to do, and allowing them to be more efficient and effective in their time together as a technical body to bring us the products that we need and give us the answers to questions that we had. So in those two fashions, those are the two major improvements that we're really trying to seek. And although the one is making sure that we have more policy people so we can keep up with the process, I think that more than anything, it's a trust issue. We have to trust our co-managers, and our co-managers have to trust us to have that consistent dialogue and to continue through in good faith to negotiate the outcomes that are the best for recovery and to comply with the obligations and management objectives that we've given to NOAA Fisheries for our fisheries in the future. So with that, I would entertain any questions that you might have about some of the other projects that you might see in the packet that you have or some of the information that I've talked about.
Thank you. This is very good.
So for staff that are in the room behind me, the chair just complimented you on your work.
Yes.
Well, I'd just like to follow up on your early note about inclusion and recognize your management. Sort of the business term, I think, is consultative management. It's hard, takes a lot of work, but the outcome is well worth the effort, I think, both in terms of the product, but also what it does for staff and, as you said, succession, staff development. And I think it was recognized. I believe that the North of Falcon team received the state team award this year. So I'm glad to see that the department is appreciating it as well. But I certainly do.
Thank you very much. And the team, myself, we all very appreciative of the recognition that we received from the directors. Thank you.
Document here today. I should say there's a lot of rocks that need to get in the box. And
I think we can stop with that.
There's a lot of familiar issues included in here. What I do like to see is a timetable to get these resolved. And one comment would be that the last one here is the work plan summary for the policy, Columbia River policy buyback provision, just a suggestion on the time frame. We will be meeting with the Oregon Commission again in September, and it would be to our benefit if we had some kind of an outline of the survey that would be used to develop a buyback program by that time in September. So when we meet with the Oregon Commission and staff, we can show progress.
I might steal your thunder here.
That's fine. Go for it. You've done it before.
The alternative gear development in the Columbia is such an enormous priority here. It's just kind of a central feature of the policy and whether it's going to work. So you have on the back page of that Columbia River policy, one-pager, alternative gear development implementation. The release mortality study issue is core, so it seems to me to deserve its own timeline. So how do we address the questions we're going to get about the release mortality study that we all look at and question?
So thank you, Commissioner Wecker. In an effort to not hand you too many of these, to give you an idea of what we have in place for the Columbia River and the policy that's under review, we have a cover sheet that goes in front of the buyback that covers, I believe, five major sections of the policy. And then each of those, I used buyback today as the example, but five key issues that are identified in the policy that then have its own work plan, and I can provide those to the Commission as well. Certainly, the work that we need to do for our survival studies with different gears, our investigation of alternative gears. We've had modifications to rules for barbless hooks, just to name a few, and all of those have their own work plan with their own teams developed so that everyone on the team can hand these out. They're basically talking points if you were to look at the performance measures and the problem statements that we're trying to overcome, so all of the staff know exactly what we're trying to accomplish by each of the tasks, but they're all identified. I just didn't hand out the entire packet.
Yeah. So can you give me a summary of what the timeline is for getting that new release mortality do-over study done?
So the release mortality work that has been going on, our initial steps were to have another study in place this fall. All of you heard at the January meeting that there may have been funds available that we're going to aggressively go after to put this in place. We are still exploring that. We ran into at least currently a brick wall on whether there is funds or aren't funds, whether they are or are not available. Our understanding is that the BPA MOU money is what was being looked at, and we at least the initial indication is that all of that money is spoken for, and each of the projects are not going to have leftover money from that to be able to rewrite any of those contracts to utilize for this particular activity. We do have SK grant applications that are due in September that we are pursuing in hopes that we could find a different fund source, while internally we have a group of people that will look further into other current funding possibilities to continue that. We have had other snags along the way from a core permit in the initial design. The design for the next study has been completed, has been shared with TAC, it has been shared with Oregon, and what that calls for is for short-term survival, net pens anchored in the Columbia River. That requires a core permit, and we've bumped up against core permit process timing and don't seem to be able to advance by that. Alternatives that we're looking at is a possible barge or possibly holding adults from that at a facility nearby and coordinating that. But without funding, we don't have the ability. We've got to get past the funding hurdle first and then see if we've still got time to put it back in play for this year or if it would be a 2017. Commissioner Carpenter talked about the meeting that we had yesterday. I know that one of the issues that we've talked about at meetings with Oregon and over the course of the last 4 or 5 months is that the survival study, at least in what has occurred to date, it won't be the limiting factor in the future. It's the impacts and the number of steelhead that we touch. B-run steelhead that are going to go upstream will be our limiting factor. It won't necessarily be the Chinook and the mortality rates that we have in place. We've got to figure out a way to get around steelhead and improve that population so that we can get a different constraining stock within the fishery and the final implementation or full implementation of the Columbia River policy.
Just one follow-up. I just heard about this steelhead issue that has been raised. So if we use, I mean, the concept and the basic concept we were pursuing with Columbia River policy is that purse seines are better than gill nets. Mm-hmm. And because of the way purse seines are operated, you can somewhat gently release each non-target fish. So wouldn't that be true for steelhead, too?
Commissioner Wecker, thank you. It is true. It would be true for steelhead. The overall number of steelhead you encounter dramatically increases, though. So it won't be the mortality rate. It'll be the actual number of animals that we touch.
And there was a considerable discussion following the discussion on the limiting factor, which it was in fact the steelhead, with regard to expansion of the fisheries in the Lower Columbia. And alternative gear came up again. And what Miranda has stated here was exactly what I was going to say. You know, there was a tremendous amount of interest in trying to come up with additional alternative gear processes that might work for us. And fish wheels was the only thing that people could come up with. I guess my concern here is, have we exhausted with all the studies that we've presently that have been completed in the Lower Columbia River with regard to the potential for new alternative gear? So I'm very interested in and complimentary when you list alternative gear development here. I'm wondering if 2017 isn't kind of a short-term sort of a timeline for the development of new alternative gear implementation, because this takes such a long time. You mentioned the Corps, for example.
Thank you, Commissioner Mankin. I'd have to double-check the alternative gear work plan that we have. That one isn't as familiar. I don't believe that, before I say that, I would have to look at that, talk to staff to see if we believe that we've exhausted options. I can't imagine that in the numbers of gears that I've heard of that we've exhausted all options. But again, I'll get back to you on looking into that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank the staff, Ron, and all your staff for yesterday's efforts on that trip to Vancouver. I thought that was great. This is a wonderful thing to start with, and I guess I would ask: this is a draft. Is this something that you might at some point distribute to key stakeholders, or what are your thoughts on that? You don't answer that right now. But I want to switch back over to what Miranda and Connie were talking about. This selective gear piece is critical, and I think we have to pull the stops out to get something done for this season, this year, because I don't know how we can do what we are intended to do when we adopted that policy to make this work for both the recreational and the commercial industries unless we know we can have some selective harvest that provides them with the amount of fish to make them economically viable. I think that's important. We agreed to do that. So I think it was about 10 days ago you and I talked, and when you told me that the funding that we thought we had was not available. So I was just a little bit taken back by that, because since last December, I thought we had money to do this. So I got online, and I started snooping around, and I started asking questions, and I believe I found a place where there's the money.
Okay.
And it's in the Shillipoo South Project. It's a joint BPA-WFW project. It's a lower estuary MOA. And all we need is $600,000. They say all, but that's all we needed to get this study going. So maybe you can research that and tell me if it's a yes or a no, because if it is a yes, we got to get moving.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
You bet. And thanks for being captive in the bus yesterday. It was a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that same topic, have we designed an experiment for this? Yeah. Do we have any kind of an experimental design that maybe the commission might look at or others?
Absolutely. As I believe I mentioned, the study design for the survival for gears has been developed, has been shared with the Technical Advisory Committee, has been shared with ODF&W, and I can get a copy of that and share that with commissioners if you'd like.
Yeah, that would be appreciated.
Great. We'll do.
Ron, one little request. We received a communique from the governor wanting to encouraging us to work with Oregon. Could you send to me like a paragraph or two, a synopsis of what the meeting was yesterday?
I can.
And then also, I guess, looking forward to the next meeting that was scheduled, and then I can pass it on to the governor's office.
He took us to lunch at Panera Bread.
And if I can, Commissioner Carpenter, since I've handed this to you, it does become a public record, so if anybody wants this, all they have to do is ask for it. And I can distribute it.
Yep. Question, and I do appreciate this too. Wanted to mention there's
Thank
a
you.
Lot of major, complicated, high priority topics, and I think you've got them here well represented. These are going to be important for showing our seriousness in satisfying the requests of our stakeholders who we are about to ask for more money from. So this is really helpful. On the Occupy Skagit idea, I see that you've got submit an RMP to NOAA by November of this year. What's your read on NOAA's willingness to consider this? Are they on board with us?
Commissioner Wecker, thank you. I would have to defer. I haven't been the lead spokesperson at that table or in those discussions, and don't want to misstate. I know that Jim Scott, special assistant to the director, has continued involvement in that, not only with our federal agencies, but with co-managers as well as staff, and I will get something to you, maybe give you a call and walk you through where we are with that, because it is a very, very important issue, and it like so many other items, seems to move a bit as we center in on the target, and we need to get it done. The rock does need to go in the box on that and many issues.
So steelhead runs.
It is.
I have to put that in every meeting.
if I may, I know I'm well over time, but relative to the Olympic Peninsula steelhead and the Guide Association. I know that for years, Commissioner Wecker, you and I have had conversations. We have submitted a CR 101 to look at reporting by guides. We have talked for years about our inability to know whether they are a positive or negative effect on the resource, and we can't defend them or criticize them because we just don't have any data. A couple of decades ago, the agencies decided that that was no longer a worthy activity. And we are working with the Guide Association to see if they would sponsor or see if they have other issues that they'd like to take to their local legislator to relative to reporting, while we are working on what that reporting would look like statewide with guides and offer them the ability to provide us that report through electronic means on a daily basis. So an app that they could fill out on a daily basis. Simple things. We don't want it to be a burden, but it dumps into a database that allows us to know what water, how many fish, how many people, those types of things that give us some rudimentary information on their activities and allows us to determine future actions if needed.
And that concludes the report. Yeah, thank you all.